We're continuing the series of family politics that make for peace. And today the particular subject is the eyes have it, that's capital I apostrophe S, or the skill, we announced it as the skill of loving confrontation. Mona changed it, she put down the skill of loving carefrontation. That's just a stroke of genius, you know.
It's not original. As you have read, those of you who have read Augsburger's book know that it's straight from there, but that's okay.
This is Mona Fote, who will be taking a lot of the leadership today, and I will supplement her efforts, and I'm Gene Fote.
Let's begin with prayer. Almighty God, our Heavenly Father, you set the solidarity of families. We commend to you your care, all the homes where the people live. Keep them, we pray, free from bitterness, from the thirst for personal victory, and from pride and self. Fill them with faith, virtue, knowledge, moderation, patience, and godliness. Knit together in enduring affection those who have become one in marriage. Let children and parents have full respect for one another and light the fire of kindliness among all, that we may show affection for each other through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. There may be some spots to sit down in the front if those of you who don't mind being on the floor. Otherwise, there's the balcony. To begin, I'd like to read a portion of scripture from Romans 12, 9. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly and sisterly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Never flag in zeal. Be aglow with the Spirit and serve the Lord. Rejoice in your hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who weep and weep with those who weep. This addresses more what we talked about yesterday in our session in terms of listening to one another and suffering with them. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly, never being conceited. Repay no one evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends upon you, live peaceably with all. The American Lutheran Church helps us in a statement regarding families. And this is a publication which I think is 20 sense and was put out by Augsburg, and the title of it is Church and the Families, for those of you who would like some resource material. A family, by its very nature, is a relationship. It is an example of the whole being larger than the sum of the parts. A family unites the individual members in bonds of love, care, and respect. Family is reserved for that group of persons related by legally defined ties of blood, marriage, or adoption, or foster care. We have reviewed for the past sessions what we had talked about in our initial session. We have tied in our material with a biblical basis each time. As you all know, those of you who have had a preview of what we're going to be doing the 2 weeks, know that Jean will be having a biblical overview next Monday. And so we're not going to review another time some of that material, but I did want to bring in the Romans passage as a biblical base for today. You know, as you read Old and New Testament, we have so many words which describe feelings. And I know in the Psalms, as we read them, particularly Psalm 40, we just hear all kinds of feeling words expressed and all kinds of feeling states which the authors express as they are telling what their particular situations in life are. Today we're going to, I can see there are many more of you here, and I'm aware that we have covered some material that is going to be basic, sort of like building stones for what we're going to talk about today. So I'm going to give a very quick review about some of the things that we covered the last couple of days. Our overall title is Family Politics That Make for Peace, and the family title is inclusive in parents with small children and older children, grandparents, people who are children in families. Last time we asked how many had children, and there was a raise of hands, and then we asked how many were children, meaning at one time or another, and we almost got no response. So today we're going to talk about The Eyes Have It, as Jean said. And I just decided that as you were gathering together, maybe you could think of this question, why do men and kids mostly take out the trash? And maybe we'll get to that eventually. Okay, the way that we have thought about this model, we've taken this from Thomas Gordon, Parent Effectiveness Training, because it's an easy model to talk about and one that many of you who have read his books, we have the Parent Effectiveness in Action book, which is available to you in the library as well as in the bookstore, as well as some other books that we put back there that we'd like for you to take a look at. We suggested that this rectangle, if each of you could sort of think about it as a window from which you view other people's behavior, if you could just kind of visualize that as you look at each other, that you have this thing in front of you, and that we talked about how this is divided into three parts. That a lot of times when people are sharing with us, they're sharing problems that do not personally affect us. Yesterday we had a role play, those of you who were here, about my nervousness about doing this and coming to Holden. And Gene was, I thought, rather good for those of you who were here. Let's hear it for Gene. Was he good?
Yeah.
Gene.
That was not planned, by the way.
I think he's probably not sure whether he should take it as a compliment, since he was good at all 12 roadblocks. And when I talked about my nervousness, he told me to stop it immediately. He threatened that if I didn't stop being nervous, he was going to, you know, divorce me or whatever. He began to moralize, as pastors sometimes can, advising, lecturing. And then the final step of his blocking our communication was when he told a joke at the end, hoping to humor me out of my nervousness. He paid absolutely no attention to my red rash that I was telling him I was getting, and you know, that I was having palpitations and that my pulse rate was going up and so forth. So I didn't find that very effective as a person who was owning a problem and feeling a lot of anxiety about the task that we had at hand. So then we tried something different. We decided that roadblocks perhaps weren't the very best way to go about this, and we suggested that there were three other ways, at least, that he could have responded. One is by just being quiet, that sometimes that works pretty well. And I know myself, if someone's quiet, I'll just keep going. You know, I'll just say a little more. And sometimes just the catharsis in itself can be very helpful to me as I'm sharing something that's a problem to me. The second way that we suggested is sometimes silence is, you know, you're not sure the person's sleeping in there, even if their eyes are open. So a little just, yeah, oh, wow, whatever, which is a way of saying noncommittal acknowledgement, which is a pretty big word. We then talked about how maybe the most potent is to actively listen to the person that's sharing a problem. I really want to stress here, as I did yesterday, now we're talking about when the other person is owning a problem that does not affect us. And the way that I can tell that that's happening is if someone shares a problem with me and I don't feel something down here like, boy, I hope they change that, or, you know, I don't like that, or whatever. An example that we talked about was like if a youngster came in and said that, you know, here they'd been at Holden the whole time and nobody was talking to them and they couldn't find activities that were a problem, that were of interest to them, then they begin to, you know, express this to you. And a lot of times, what do we end up doing when someone does that, that comes and shares that with us? What do we immediately move into, usually? Suggestions, right. Well, there's this, and then there's that, and there's, and then we decided that although we may give all of those suggestions, what was the common word that people respond back? Yes, but, oh, well, I can't do it this time. That's too far, this is too long, too high, whatever. And then pretty soon you realize that although they're really wanting some help on the problem, that they're not buying suggestions and advice, and that sometimes to reflect what they might be feeling is important. The reason that active listening is so important to me is that it suggests that I really do believe in relationships that people can be left with their own problems and that I do not have to be in there dealing with them all the time. But that most people have the ability to solve their own problems. And it's the greatest gift in the world to listen to someone. And as I said yesterday, that a lot of times we like to see things packaged and wrapping paper in a nice big bow on them and people go away. But most often, people don't solve their problems that way. In a relationship, when we finish talking, people leave and sometimes they have open wounds. And we trust that there are all kinds of resources to them in relationships and also in relationship with God for healing to occur. So, let's see. When this person with whom we're having a relationship, this is the smiling face on the left, would be what we would call the sender. When the person is sending a problem, a lot of times they're having distress within them. And we see a lot of nonverbal signs about that. Small children often will just kind of whimper or they say something. And we did an exercise yesterday where everyone turned to one another and just said, "Would you listen to me for a few moments?" And the person said yes or no, and the other person said the same. And we realized how awkward it was that we never really say to one another, "This is what I want. Hey, how about 5 minutes of your time?" And the group shared that that's not what they normally do when they want someone to listen to them. They just kind of sneak it in, and I agreed that I was really a good one for that. I'm a rather understated person, and so you have to really be listening because I'm not going to say to someone, "I really mean it. Give me your time." So what we do is we send messages, and we put them into codes, which are words. And then as a listener or receiver of the message, a responsibility that we might have is to take it out of the code and to feed back a response which would complete the communication. An example of that would be with the person that tells you, the child, for example, that they haven't found what they had expected at Holden, that, you know, well, those girls aren't very friendly or whatever. What kinds of feelings would be expressed in a statement like that? What would the person or the child be feeling?
Disappointment.
Disappointment, which would be a word that a child that age might understand. If that same experience had happened with a 3 or 4, what would be a better word? Because disappointment's kind of big.
Sad.
You're sad. So you might, if the child sent that kind of a statement in a code and said, "I don't think anybody at Holden likes me," and you as a parent or as a listener might said, "So you're feeling kind of sad that you haven't found a friend," then they might say something else like, "Yeah, I go to play and everybody has a friend," and you might say something else. Now, a lot of times, what happens, you know, you're still wrestling with it, especially as a parent. I know at night I would think about it, or I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd say something to them about it the next day, and they'd say, "Well, what do you mean?" Because it was just enough that a couple of comments got it off their chest, and they went on to something else. Well, I'm still trying to think about how they're going to solve their problem. And if we are in relationships with many people, you know that we could be rather burdened if we began to take on everyone's problem as our personal problem without believing and trusting that they could solve their own. Okay, let's see. I need to turn it over to you because really what I'm talking about is not what we're supposed to be presenting today. So I think you need a little time. Anything you want to add to this?
No, except if we're going to start on the bottom, we maybe need to focus on some unacceptable behaviors where we have a problem in the relationship.
Okay, I'm wondering, do we have time for the brief active listening thing that we were going to do? Do you think? Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Trade places with you.
Sometimes, in fact, often in most any relationship, we discover that whatever the behavior is that is going on with another person as we look at the other is not acceptable at all. You know, the child, the husband, the wife, the friend, the person I work with, the fellow kitchen hand, the one working on the grounds, whatever, just does all kinds of things, it seems, to bug me. And maybe it becomes my problem as well then. And if I'm going to be a part of a family system where there are politics that make for peace, then indeed it's not going to be possible to ignore that kind of relationship. I always have a kind of uncomfortable feeling about the people who tell me, particularly those who are married, that they've never raised their voice to each other throughout the years of their marriage. Now, that might be commendable, but I suspect what that means is there's been some kind of a game relationship where there have been trade-offs, where I will not get on you in terms of what I don't like about you if you'll let me have my own little areas where you won't get on me either about them. So there's a kind of truce, if not by direct agreement, at least by a kind of unconscious understanding that that's the way we're going to proceed. But if we're going to be truthful and honest in our relationships, then indeed we need to take seriously the behaviors that occur down here, and we need to say that we have a problem in the relationship and we need to do something about it. Now, it is possible, I mentioned, I guess it was the first time that we had a session, that I can change myself in some way and maybe live with it. But I don't do very well at that. It isn't a very peaceful kind of experience in the relationship. It is not shalom in the fullness of well-being and wholeness that we want for the family community. It might also be, I mentioned yesterday, that if we have children or grandchildren or anyone else in a relationship and we're in a certain kind of environment, a place where the behavior is going on that's a problem in our relationship, we might be able to change the environment. And that makes it better. For example, if the vacuum cleaner is on, that's happened a number of times here in Koinonia, and that obviously would not be acceptable right now if it were noisy, we perhaps could suggest to the person, would it be possible to sweep somewhere else? Wouldn't be any nasty kind of thing. The person might well say, well, surely, you know, I'll be glad to go to another place as a housekeeper and finish the work there. But we would be doing something about it to change the environment. But some things just don't go away. They linger on. And I would imagine that we could think of those unacceptable behaviors in our relationships with other people that don't go away. You know, they're just there, and they bug us. They perhaps are upsetting. They interfere with something we want to do. Can you think of any? You know, think of someone now. Think of one person, and this is this window idea, this acceptance, unacceptance kind of area. Can you think of some behaviors, what others might do or say that really would be unacceptable to you, and you really want that changed? Can you think of one?
Yeah.
Two? Okay, anyone, please.
People leaving their stuff lying all over the house.
Okay, especially if it's in my own home. George or Judy or whoever it is that leaves the stuff lying over the house. Okay. I'll make that more specific. I think that would affect me more that way than if I went into someone else's house where
oh,
that
yeah,
occurred.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's new,
yes.
You're going to end up picking it up.
Okay, thank you. Another.
4-year-old that won't stop jumping. No, just everywhere. Jumping.
Okay, you have a jumping jack four-year-old. Couch, chair, trying to eat or whatever. Just up and down. Okay. Working with someone who smokes. And the signs that you put up, which sort of suggest the environment is not for smoking, they don't work. The person continues to smoke, and you're breathing the smoke. Okay, another.
Not being in time to reach the event.
Okay, especially if it's someone like... like wife or the leaders? Yeah, okay. Now, we can probably think of all kinds of unacceptable things. In fact, most of us, because we are so tuned in to being critical and judgmental, we are much more able and likely to establish a list of unacceptable behaviors about someone else than we are what we really appreciate in them. And I would just underscore at that point that if we're talking about family politics that make for peace, and we want our relationships to be healthy and full and to really be deep, we surely are still saying we want to do everything possible to expand the goodness, the kindness, the gentleness, and all of those qualities we really desire and respect in our relationships with other people. But there are still these unacceptable, and they are the ones that sort of linger on. So what are we going to do about them? Well, if we go to the roadblocks, we know what we can do. If, for example, someone is smoking and the problem continues, we can just say to the person, hey, you stop smoking or else. Yeah. Well, we might get a few favorite kind of expressions back or gestures, depending on the person, and depending on how we say that and how much we come through as an authority. Or maybe, let me just suggest a situation that's in here. Your task is to mentally construct the five alternative responses to the following episode. How might you respond? And I'm not going to answer it at this point, but this is the situation. For years, you have been unable to say no to the heavy demands on your time from a charitable organization, like the church, which you have gladly supported. Now the chairperson is calling on you again to attempt to pressure you into heading up the annual fund drive, even though this is one of your least favorite tasks. When you refuse, she only redoubles her efforts to persuade you. Well, of course, that could just as well be he. You feel like saying a variety of things. How can you ask me to do this again after all the time I donated last year? Quit twisting my arm. You notice how these start fitting in, the roadblocks up here? Can't you be more considerate? I'm so tired of all this load of jobs, deadlines, and obligations. Count me out, mark me off your list, and get someone who has nothing better to do. But you reflect a moment on all of those possibilities that we all use at various times, roadblocks to communication that's effective and helpful like those, and we want to come up with a better idea. And what might that be? Well, think about that. We will try to answer that, hopefully together, by the end of the session today. Now, in Scripture, I believe we can surely, first of all, take our leading in terms of helpful ways to respond. Let's go back, for example, in family relationships, to the Colossians passage that has these words, and we're not going to try to exegete them or really understand them more at this point than to share them. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands, for that is what you should do as Christians. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, it is your Christian duty to obey your parents always, for that is what pleases God. Parents, do not irritate your children, or they will become discouraged. Then a section in Ephesians, instead, by speaking the truth in a spirit of love, we must grow up in every way to Christ, who is the head. Under his control, all the different parts of the body fit together, and the whole body is held together by every joint with which it is provided. So when each separate part works as it should, the whole body grows and builds itself up through love. So there you have a picture of the community of Christ, which also becomes the style of the life of the family if we're going to have politics that make for peace, where it is the responsibility of everyone there to be a peacemaker, so that we support each other, we respect each other, we have that equal regard of the agape love, so that we do, in fact, build each other up in the name of Christ and according to that style of communication that he would ordain. In one of the little books that we have suggested, you can have a family where everybody wins. The alternative that is suggested in this book, and is also throughout the area of parent effectiveness training or effectiveness training for Lutherans, and which is also in the Augsburger books that we are suggesting, and of course other places too. Gahlke refers to I messages instead of you messages and calls them loving confrontation. By contrast, in terms of how you might respond to a child or another person, telling the child how you feel with a non-blameful description of the behavior which is interfering with your needs is non-judgmental, conveys your trust in him as a person who is a child of God and is empowered by God's Spirit, frees him to respond to your need in the power of his new man willingly out of love, facilitates your child's growth in the new life in Christ, the life which relates constructively to others in love. Now, it seems to me that if we're going to develop a skill of loving confrontation or care-frontation, then we need to be faithful to the spirit of love and peacemaking of the New Testament within the family, and we need to develop some sort of an alternative style of confronting the person about the unacceptable behavior. And I'd just like to suggest some things we need to look at if we're going to be faithful to this building up of the family as a community of Christ. One is, we surely want to have a regard for the other. We call that self-esteem. We want to do or say that which will not tear apart the life of the other person, regardless of age, youngest, oldest, and everybody in between. I would assume we would also, because of the relationship concern as a part of a family, or beyond the family as well, we would like to do something that would keep the relationship intact so that we don't lose each other. My, that's especially true in family. Isn't it really somewhat extraordinary that sometimes we are the most vicious with the people who are closest to us and those where we have the most to lose in terms of the relationship and particularly in terms of the spirit of love, Christ's love in relationships? It seems also, especially as we think of children, but surely not limited to children, but to others and families as well, that we would want to do or say that which would provide opportunity for the other person to continue to grow. We wouldn't want to squelch the growth of the other person. And surprisingly, perhaps, we might want to do something or say something in our care fronting, our confrontation, which would permit the other person to decide. That the other person would be a part of the change of the unacceptable behavior. Now, it doesn't take a lot of repeated demonstrating to realize that the roadblocks do very little of that. They may at times, but the more difficult the problem, probably the less likely if you order or threaten or you blame or you probe, or you simply use humor and dismiss it sarcastically, or whatever, that you're going to be successful in trying to change the behavior that is bugging, plaguing the relationship. So we have a shift from what is a you message, which is essentially putting everything on the other person, to an I message. What an I message does is it tells the other person how that unacceptable behavior affects me as a person in the family system. I feel such and such. this is what's happening inside me. I want you to know that if you continue that behavior, this would be the kind of effect it would have in my life. And so hopefully by giving another person that kind of input about me, it very well may be that that person will say, well, I know what I'll do, and change it. Or that we can see the other person can grow in terms of responsibility much more readily than if I simply shape and control the life of the other. Or that our relationship is likely to remain intact, that we'll have much less damage to the relationship if I use an I message. Now, the I message, and you notice now again, that's not just eye contact, you know, it's I, the self. What I'm going to say to another person has some parts that are used in a variety of parenting classes now. One of the parts has to do with my feelings. And so, of course, that's something like I feel, whatever the feeling might be. I feel that. Disappointed. I feel frustrated. I feel put upon. I feel cheated. Whatever the feeling might be, with all the richness of feeling words that we might have, that we try to be as expressive and aware of the feeling as possible. Another part of it is that we don't want to blame the other, so we want to describe at times the behavior that's unacceptable as non-blamefully as possible. So instead of saying, well, let's see, what was who again would just suggest one of the unacceptable behaviors you had a few moments ago? Like the smoking, maybe. Okay, if you say, when you smoke those filthy weeds that absolutely irritate everybody in this room, as nasty as that is, that's pretty blameful, isn't it? Yeah, okay, you just say, well, when you're smoking that cigarette, or when you're smoking the cigar, whatever it is. So non-blamefully, very important, so that the other person has a chance to hear the message that I'm giving. The other part of it is, generally speaking, and often this is true, I think, particularly with children, we need to try to give as specific information as possible about how that behavior affects me. And so we might also include something like because. Well, when you smoke that cigarette, I'm really upset because it's harming my health.
When the four-year-old is hopping, you might, it depends on what you're doing or how the child is disturbing you, but it might be when you're hopping around the room while I'm reading this book or watching television, I'm getting upset because I can't concentrate. You'd have to think of language that would be easier than concentrate, but I can't get the story or something. The three parts are the feeling is upset, the non-blameful description is just you're hopping, which a child that age could certainly understand, but the because is important. It has to be sellable to the kid. And of course, with teenagers, when we say things which are value statements, it's often difficult because they don't buy that it really is a problem to us. So then you get into another area. I'm wondering, are you aware of how?
Right. I'd just like to close off this part of the presentation before we do some perhaps practicing ourselves, some exercising of this possibility. I really like these Augsburger books. It's the kind of presentation that I see that I would like to have written. You know, it just crystallized so well about what we're trying to suggest. As he talks about care fronting and calls it the creative way through conflict, the way you begin to deal with unacceptable behavior, he has some little poetic expressions in bold type as each chapter begins. I love you. If I love you, I must tell you the truth. I want your love. I want your truth.
love me enough to tell me the truth. I want to hear you, see what you see, feel what you feel. I want to be heard. Hear me as I hear you. Listen, I'm listening to you. So I will speak simply with clear word windows that let you see all the way in to where I live, laugh, and cry. And I think the beauty of this kind of care fronting is that I really am a transparent, authentic, vibrantly spirit-led human being when I'm willing to open myself up to speak the truth in love. And I'd just like to underline that, because maybe that's what it comes down to speak the truth in love. Mona?
Hey, Gene has just done a terrible thing. The fact is, this is about my fourth time that I've gotten in the car and there's no gas in the car. And often I time myself such a very, you know, short period of time to get to work. And, you know, the medical school is right there and there's a lineup of traffic. So it's really irritating me, and I've been wanting to say something to him for a long time, but today's the day. Gene, I went out in the car, the Aspen again today, and it was absolutely no petrol. I mean, zero gas. And I'm aware you're so inconsiderate of that. And obviously you've just been thinking of yourself, or you would have filled that up, because you know how important it is for me to be to work.
Well, I think Brent or Laura, Keith, somebody like that should have done it. I didn't have time.
Well, but you're obviously the one who used the car last. And you know what the family rule is. That whoever uses the car last is cognizant of the fact that the gas is on zero. And I mean, it's just a characteristic of a whole bunch of other ways that you are. Okay, so let's try it another way.
I know I'm mad. You convinced me.
The one thing I wanted to say, I can't probably muster up too much anger, because Gene isn't the one usually needs the gas tank. But I would like to say that a lot of times people feel that iMessages need to be said with this counselor kind of attitude, and you know, you sound just like you have it all together. That is where most people begin to discredit PET. When you're angry about something, to get yourself all together in a nice counselor way is not authentic. And I think people begin to think that you're faky. And so if this were a big deal, you know, I would really be getting up ahead of steam about it and come on with a beautiful iMessage, but with the full feeling which I might have about something. Gene, I can't believe it, but the car is empty with gas again, and it's just so frustrating to me, because every morning when that does happen, I end up being late for work. My clients are waiting for me, and it's just a total embarrassment for me.
I didn't have time to do anything about it yesterday. I got home late. It was after 10. Everything was closed.
Okay, at this point, I have two alternatives, and let's see how the first way goes. Well, I tell you, but, you know, this isn't the first time that you've done this. This is like the third time that I've suggested how frustrating it is, and, you know, I don't understand you're not responding to me.
Well, I'm sorry. I'll be glad to go fill it up now.
But you were supposed to do something different. Two alternatives is oftentimes when you're into blaming, the person gives some kind of response back, and he now owns the problem. So what did we talk about yesterday? When someone owns the problem, what is the best thing to do? You need to shift to listening to it, even though it's very difficult. He was telling me about a shortness of time. Now often what we do is we just continue sending I messages, and the defensiveness of the person continues to get higher and higher, and you're still not into such good communication. Now, I really didn't feel too much like listening to that, because to me it was not good enough excuse. So it was hard for me to say, so you were really short of time yesterday, And I mean, that would have been hard, but it would have been helpful, because normally a person gets more defensive when you send another iMessage right back. I'm thinking, in brevity of time, instead of writing an iMessage, why don't we propose several situations and get a response, have everyone think one through in their head and get a response from the group that way. Would that be all right?
That's fine. You want to go back to the one in here to begin with?
Yeah, let's do. Remember, Jean talked about the person who had served the church diligently in several committees, and they now were being prescription by saying, when the car is empty of gas, I feel frustrated because and such and such. Or you can start, boy, I'm real hot. And then, you know, you can go any way that you can. So let's say this person has asked them over and over. They are really wanting to give a very clear message that they do not want to help on this committee. So let's think of, just spend a second and think about an iMessage in your own head using these three parts. Okay, who has a good one? Fast learning here.
How about my problem?
What?
My problem would be that I just don't have the time and energy to do the proper job.
Okay. So what would you be feeling if you were sharing that with the person you were talking with?
I feel frustrated because I know that I would not be able to do a good enough job for what you're asking of me.
Okay. So if you wanted to have the three parts, you might say, what would be like a when you, what would that part be? When you continue to ask me after I've said no, if that would be the full thing.
I feel frustrated because I don't think that you understand that I wouldn't be able to do a good job.
Okay.
Well, how about I'm feeling very unfulfilled when I do this, and when you continue to ask me, it makes me realize all the more that that isn't where my gifts lie, and did I get it all?
Yeah,
sounds good.
In fact, you had four parts. It's beautiful.
does the when you clause in front of it compensate for the because?
I mean,
like when you continue to ask me over and over again, mm-hmm. if I said no, it makes me feel da 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 da. Then you don't need a because, do you?
No, and I think we should say that any time that we teach a skill, we tend to overemphasize and exaggerate perhaps how you do it. And the reason for that is, for most of us, we don't have naturally that kind of speech pattern. We probably, I would guess, tended to give more you messages than we would anything like an I message. And so the more we exaggerate the effect of learning it, the more likely it is we'll at least do part of it. So then, for example, you might just say, I've had it. You know, maybe that's all you'd say first. Or you'd say, I'm really bugged. Or you know, depending on how you knew the person and what you wanted to say to that person. Maybe it would have one part, as it were, you know, instead of three even.
I don't even know what the circumstances are you're talking about here. What the problem is being solved.
Someone had been repeatedly asked to help out at a church after they had served many, many committees, and they'd said no, but the person wanted to know, again, why they couldn't and this kind of thing. And we're asking for a response of what could you say in a non-blameful way to that person in order to get some results? Yes?
Would it be offensive to say, why can't you accept my role?
You could say that. Sure. I could say, well, because, you know, the last committees you've served on, you have done so well. And I tell you, everyone in this whole congregation says, let so-and-so do it. And I just think that unless, I mean, the program really depends on you totally. I doubt if it'll fly, if anyone else will do it.
I'm very kind of you to say that, okay, but I really do not have the time.
Okay. Well, you know, the Lord provides time.
I have been trying doing that so much in the past. I wish I would like somebody else to have
done that. Okay.
You could say something that, I mean, is it turning into a you message if you were to say, I feel like you don't respect me and my feelings, and I feel like you don't listen to what I'm saying.
You know, you do use word you in the statement quite often. You know, when you leave your clothes on the floor, you know, you're using you in it. So that's not a you message. You have to use you in order to describe. And I guess your statement is very potent. I have shared with you three times why I'm unable to serve on the committee, and I'm getting frustrated because I don't believe you really have heard the clear message that I, or whatever.
Yeah. Come on. Okay.
How about this situation? Oh, go ahead.
I might call it would be refused and then say, see that for next year.
Okay. Maybe I will feel refreshed by next year.
Are you advocating then that, like, if in the heat of the moment there's a lot of anger, that you go ahead and express that anger in an I statement?
You know, anger, there are just so many ways that we all have worked out for ourselves. Some people prefer when they're really angry to go away for a while and to form a good I message. Other people feel that they are able to state what they want to. A lot has to do whether it's secondary or primary relationships. I find that in most families, we just let it fly. It seems like with, you know, guests or friends, sometimes we, or work relationships, we want to, when we say something, we really want to have it more together. That's my personal experience. I don't know if anyone else has something that is different for that. Let's use another example. You're due to meet a friend downtown. This gets to your situation. And they are 20 minutes late. And let's say that it's not the first time they've been 20 minutes late. So what would be a good I message to this person? We think about the three parts in sort of a rigid way. By the way, while you're thinking, you're going to use all of the communication that's available to you, as well as some roadblocks in your communication pattern. And this certainly is not the only way to speak. But I think when you own a problem with someone else, you're often perplexed about how to do it. And so this gives you some tools to expand what you already have found works well for you.
Okay. I'm really worried when you are late because I think something has happened to you.
Okay. Some people would want to say 21 minutes, 3 seconds, and so forth to be more specific. How about another way? Because there's so many ways you could say this.
If the ride is late, and I depend so much on rides, I sometimes say, I know you're rather late, but I will not look a gift horse in the mouth. And that's what I'm told. They feel so happy they're giving me this gift.
Okay, and now, okay, I think that is somewhat indirect.
It sure is.
Okay. Let me give you an I message. If you were to be indirect with me, I would worry that I wouldn't always catch the full potency of what you wanted to say. Okay. How about, I know we just have a few minutes for questions, rather than another example, you all, if you're interested, if you have never read this material and your appetite is growing for it, please read the resources that are back on the table. They're in the library and the bookstore, and I know would be in your hometown. How about questions, things that have...
Well, it seems that sometimes when I say, I feel this this way when you do this, whatever, the person still, the message that one hears can still be, well, you're blaming me for your feelings now. In other words, it's my fault that you're frustrated. Mm-hmm. Or, and so that it still can come across blaming, and the response can be, well, anything from it's not my fault that you're angry, or I mean, it can still be, it can turn into a negative confrontation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about that? I don't care for
them. Right, they can. In a caring, of course, you're hoping for a caring relationship, and it's true that sometimes, like if you look at someone and you think that there's some kind of problem, it may be a problem inside of you that's causing you. like if you meet someone who's critical and you're thinking about your mother who's very critical and you put on them, well, they're always critical. You know, you have compounded feelings sometimes. And it's really not the other person. It's maybe the first time they were ever critical in their life or something. So, yeah, a lot of times there will be distress between you because you are confronting. It's not like you're saying, oh, by the way, we didn't talk about positive I messages. But, you know, there is a problem here, so there is going to be tension between you when you're dealing with this issue.
I think there's built into, especially a Christian understanding of the family, very often the kind of conviction that we should not have conflicts, that actually they're not appropriate because we are to live with such a gentleness that you never confront. And if we put all of Scripture together, well, obviously that's not the case, because God made us with all these feelings that have positive and negative effect, and they must be dealt with in relationships because they don't go away. The energy that's associated with the feelings does not disappear. It either comes back and is turned inward and does something to us, and usually with that it does something to the relationship that is even much more negative than the confrontation or the carefronting as we present it. Laura, I think we had something.
I was just curious to ask, after you have tried again to give several I messages and they don't seem to be getting through, what is the solution after that?
You need to come tomorrow.
Tomorrow we talk about nonviolent or peaceful, more positive word, peaceful conflict resolution. So that is a kind of commercial for tomorrow.
I would like to say that in terms of a marriage relationship or a loving relationship between two people who are going to spend some time together, oftentimes men have been trained in their early life that they should handle all problems and know how to handle all problems. And when a woman cries or is frustrated or whatever the problem might be, and this could be reversed also, the roles are reversed, but oftentimes men do not know what to do about a distressed woman. And that's very unsettling because in their life, in preparation for the heavy task which men have been given, they're supposed to know how to do everything. And so I remember early in our marriage, often when I felt like crying or just, you know, whatever, really all I wanted to do was cathart or maybe Gene to hold me, or, you know, I didn't have any expectation he would solve my problem. But a lot of times I think men are afraid of emotion and not sure what to do because, as I said, they've just been trained that they have solutions for, or supposed to have solutions for a lot of things. And that's a terribly heavy burden for anyone to always feel that they have to be able to patch things up. And so it's beautiful in a relationship if, as the two of you grow together, that sometimes one of you is going to express problems and it does affect the other person, but it doesn't mean you have to move in and solve it or make it all better. And you're awfully sorry that that's the feeling that the other person is having to endure at that time.
I have a couple of questions. My first one is, I was raised in a family that took the Dale Carnegie course. And they're big on complimenting people as kind of a legal manipulation. And they would say something to me like, you are such an caring person. I know that you want to know about this, you know. Or, you're such a loving daughter, my mom would say this to me. I know you want to know about this. I feel such and such. Do you think that's manipulative?
How does it feel to you?
Depending on the circumstance, you know, it was or it wasn't. But, and then I kind of grew into that just kind of by, you know, osmosis, you know. I started doing that when I was bartering for antiques, you know, saying something nice about the antique and then saying something about why I should get it for a cheaper price. And so everybody calls me a real diplomat, you know. But I don't know if that's a good technique.
I would like to respond to that. Mona a moment ago mentioned the positive I message. One of the things that we very often do, I believe, is to use praise appreciation to hook people into some kind of behavior that we really do expect. And so we are twisting things a bit to get an anticipated or expected response. I think probably as significant for the use of iMessages in care-fronting ways of unacceptable behavior is to use them in what you might call the no-problem area for positive affirmation and statement. Now, that means, for example, that if I like the way you look, instead of my saying something that, you know, you really look good, I'll bet it's because you did such and such. You know, so that immediately you know you're being evaluated, measured, etc. Notice the difference of a positive iMessage. When you put on that dress, I really feel a great deal of joy. Now, see, then the way she looks or what she has done, etc., I'm not sort of suggesting by that you look bad yesterday, etc. I'm just saying that right now when I look at you, it's a happy experience. And there's no evaluation in it, hopefully. And the same is true like grades. You know, I think grades are a problem in most families, or they can be at least. And so a child has been getting C's and occasionally an A, and the child comes home and has all A's on a grade card. Now, if I want to praise the child, I could probably say, I knew you could do it. Look what you did now. You got all A's. Now you really are a significant person in this house. You know, something like that. See, that tells the child, I didn't amount to much before, but I guess now I have worth. Which also means if I get bad grades again, I'm not going to be worth very much. If I simply say, when you get grades like that, you know, I'm really excited. That, see, there aren't hooks in it. It's just a kind of expression of my own appreciation within me about that experience. There's a tremendous difference between the two. Actually, iMessages are simply a way, in the positive use of them, of saying, I love you. You know, I'm letting you know how much pleasure and joy and caring there is within me for you as a person. Other questions? Well, I know it is our prayer that care fronting, even with all of the pain that it means, will indeed be that which will build much better relationships for all of us as God works in our lives together. Thank you very much for sharing today.
See you tomorrow.